Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that sound. Wiggling.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Baby, take the toll as the West Coast rolls on by.
record.
We just shine rise to the wheels fall off. Just big drink, big money, so come and chill with a boss. Respect the EF, we stay putting it down, homie. Fat brunettes in my shirts for cheese on them. We just shine rise, we side hustlers, we side with rappers. Like if you ain't from the east side, then you don't hate me. East side ride to the wheels fall off. Big drink, big money, so come and chill with a boss. Respect the EF, stay putting it down, homie. Fat blue lady, then my shirt's for cheese on me. East side riders, west side hustlers, east side with rascals, east side mufflers. We make it crack a leg. If you ain't from the east side, then you don't hate, go hate, go hate, go hate.
What's going on right here?
Yeah, 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 what it is, man, what it do. This is King Eric, and you are now tuned in for an exclusive episode of Off the Cuff Radio, episode 439, underway. That track right there, we had to show love to Long Beach. That was Goldie Lowe, East Side Thing. And the reason why I wanted to bring him on is because our guest of the night is a part of that branch. He's a part of that branch, and before we go ahead and bring him on, this show is sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, Da Vinci Clothing, Jesse Boutique, Core Financial. And this guy right here, man, he's a jack of all trades. We talking artist, producer, manager, consultant. There are going to be some times where you probably won't even hear much from me because you know the game that he's going to be giving us on this show is going to be endless. So without further ado, the boss of Jazzy Management, Mr. Shondale Jazzy Rosa. What's the deal, brother?
Man, just chilling, man. Thanks for having me on, man. I was grooving to that song, man. I like that Goldie song right there. How y'all doing, man?
Yeah. Hey, man, I'm good, man. We wait on T-Max to join us, but nevertheless, man, I'm going to hold it down in the meantime. It's great to have you on, man. We've been working to get this thing going together, man. And before we go on, we just want to let people know that we appreciate everybody that tuned in for the episode 439. It's like a milestone, and it's an honor of having you as a part of the archives.
Man, I'm privileged to be a part of that, man. Privileged to be a part of that, man. I like y'all movement.
Yeah, I got T-Max on the line right now, man. So, yeah, we about to get this thing underway. What's up, brother?
What up, T? Is he there?
Yeah, I'm trying to get him on. Hold on 1 second. T-Max, you on? Hold on, I'm going to have him call back. Now, we got an 818 caller right here. Let's see who's on the line right here. This is from the West Coast. 818, you on, bro?
Yo, yo, can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir.
What up, what up? This is Dyer Lansky. I just want to give a big shout-out to Off the Cuff. And, of course, my OG, that special guest you guys on, Jazzy. It's my dude right there, one of the hardest working dudes in the industry, always has been.
What up, dog?
And, you know, what up? You know, we got some great things going on. So before I went in my session, I wanted to check in with everybody, just send my love. You know that.
What up, dog?
Hey,
thanks,
man.
That's my
love.
Bro for life. He in the studio cooking up some potion, that new magic potion, I already know.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, one thing these artists don't know, and one thing Jazzy has on his resume and everybody that he's worked with is called consistency. And honestly, if you want to be a good artist, you got to stay consistent. You just got to. Otherwise, there's no point in doing it.
Exactly. That's the realest words ever spoke right there, consistency.
Absolutely. So salute to y'all. Have a great show, Jazzy. You know, we'll be talking very soon, my homie. Off the Cuff Radio. You know, keep doing it, homie. I'll definitely be listening online in the studio while you guys are doing your thing. So I just wanted real quick give a shout out to everybody.
Dope.
No doubt, man. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you. Peace.
All right. T-Max, I think you on now.
What's going on, y'all? What's going on, y'all? Hello, Prior Business, Jazzy. This is great to have you with us, man. What's going on?
Yes,
I mean, you know, and this was a show, you know, we were really excited about because there's a lot of nooks and crannies, ups and downs, ins and outs, you know, management and mischief, you know, bosses and frauds in the game, man. And one thing about it is that your expertise, your excellence, your professionalism, you know, your infinite intellectualism, man, is something every artist needs to know in terms of getting into the game. You know, I mean, we're glad to have you, man. I mean, what I missed so far?
We just starting, man.
We just starting.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Thanks,
well,
King,
I mean, definitely, man. Was that Dyer that just called in too?
Yeah, that's Dyer Lansky, man.
Yes. Shout out to Dyer, man. Dyer for Entertainment, man. Always family, man.
Yeah.
So I guess we go ahead and get right into it as we always do about this time. So, Jazzy, I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Rosa, in terms of, you know, how you got in the game, you know, and we got a little bit of time. I mean, the floor is yours, man. Tell us, because you got a lot of stories and a lot of expertise to share, man. I mean, let's get with it.
Oh, man. First of all, once again, man, thank y'all for having me on. Definitely won't disappoint you guys, man. I'm very privileged to be a part of the classic interviews you guys been putting down, but I've been in the game.
We appreciate it.
Half my, thank you, man. Y'all been putting in a lot of work, man. But I've been in the game half my life, man. I've been pushing this culture half my life, man. Got in the game early in the early 80s, man, and was privileged to meet up with Ice-T, man, a guy named Beatmaster Vic, rest in peace, one of Ice-T's good friends. He was at one point the drummer for Body Count. We knew
each
other.
Yeah, man. Moose Man was the bassist. But yeah,
Beatmaster Vic, rest in peace.
Yeah.
You know, him and a guy named Funky Fresh, dude from New York, that lived out in L.A., they took me, you know, introduced me to club radio, not Radiotron. Radiotron became a club after club radio. But that's where Hen G, Africa Islam, Shawnee Sean, Shawnee Mac, Ice-T, The Glove, you know, that was they spot, man. Evil E and Hen G, you know.
Yeah.
I had to, that's what kind of changed my life and made me really want to take it serious. Was privileged to go to the the club radio, and I went a couple of times, and then I kept asking Beatmaster Vic and a few other people to tell Ice I wanted to get on stage. So one night, man, I got up there. I said, all right, you know, let him get up here. That changed my life, man. Ice let me get up on stage, and here we are today, man. I got on stage, and he let me rock the mic, glove, put on the instrumental, and the rest is history, man, and I was in the early 80s, man.
Man, and Jazzy, you take it back, of course, with Hen G and Evil E, because they released an album back in the day called Brothers, you know, I believe
exactly.
Back in like 1991. Yeah, man, part of Rhyme Syndicate. So, yeah, man, I mean, so in terms of it, like, you know, you said, you know, dude put on instrumental, you just got up there and you just started going with it. I mean, was it some stuff you'd already written or you just kind of busted a freestyle? I mean, was this like the preparation that you were prepping for your whole life when you finally got the performance and you nailed it? I mean, what was going on with it?
Well, to be honest with you, some of it was written and some of it was just from my head. I was really nervous because I wanted to impress Ice. I was always he was known in our neighborhood already. This was in the early 80s. So I got up there, and when I came off stage, man, he told me I did a good job, and there was some cats up there that I looked up to, and they, you know, embraced me, man. And then from there on, I only went up there a couple of more times after that, then it closed. But stayed in contact with, to this day, I'm real good with Hen G. That's my big bro, man. We chop it up all the time, you know. And a lot of history in that building, man. A lot of history. And I wound up meeting Tony Gonzalez, the original mix master from K-Day. And he got me my first record deal. I was the first one to sign with Techno Hop Records. That's where Ice-T did Six in the Morning. That's where
The Unknown was
the one who discovered TMW, Chill, and MC8. I was the first artist signed over there. I wound up making Answer Records because I was young. And Fly Girl came out. And that's when the Roxanne, Shantae, all the Answer Records was popping. and we were just playing in the studio, and they was like, hey, write a song to Boogie Boy, Fly Girl, and I wrote a song called Whack Girl, and it just so happened Bobby Jimmy liked it. Bobby Jimmy, Russ Parr, he wound up playing it, and from us playing in the studio, became a little record that got some pretty decent spins, just from joking, you know, and, you know, that was my introduction to the business, you know.
Wow. Tell us about the West Coast during that time in terms of it, you know, of course, you know, going back to K-Day, you know, all the clubs like Palladium, Skateland, all of that. What was it like in terms of that burgeoning scene during that time?
You know, man, it was like a young kid, because my neighborhood was, I don't like to say gang infested, but a lot of gang banging was going on in my neighborhood. So that was my escape, man. I would go to the club radio, and then it transitioned from club radio to Radiotron. Shouts out to David Guzman and Carmelo Alvarez, because once Ice kind of started bubbling and doing his thing, doing movies and kind of, you know, prospered from the club thing to doing big things, I took over I carried that torch, and they started calling it Club Radiotron. I won a rap contest there because I actually went back up thinking I was going to club radio, and it was under new management, and other people was running it, and they passed me the torch. I won a little rap contest up there, and David Guzman and Carmelo Alvarez liked the way I rocked the mic and how I, you know, a lot of people used to come up there. In the beginning, you know, we had to build up the fan base, and then after a while, Club Radiotron started popping, but they heard me rap, and they said, man, we would like for you to MC the club, and that changed my life, man. Because I remember, you know, coming there when IC was running it. Now I got my opportunity to run it, man. And the rest is history, man. I wound up being the MC of the club. David Guzman and Carmelo, you know, passed me the torch. And I was there until that club closed. But at that time, we had a little after, I mean, you had the Wrecking Crew, you know, doing their thing. You had Dudos. Lonzo and Rod was the top promoters back then, and then K-Day was just taking off, so Antron, a dude named Antron, was the DJ at Radiotron for a little while, and then Tony Gonzalez, the mix master, he became like, he was DJing for me. He's the one who introduced me to DJ Unknown. They heard me rocking, because I used to tell stories, so, you know, I wound up being the MC at Club Radiotron. You know, Ice would come up there and give me my blessings, you know. And then one day we were doing a video because I did a song called Breakdance Coast to Coast. And Darlene, which is Ice-T's ex-girlfriend that was on the cover, you know.
Shout out
Ice-T's
to Ortiz.
Infamous.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. It's still on YouTube. Me and her did a little, I had wrote a little verse. It was originally for this breakdancer named Ozrock, but he had to do some business out of town. So I wrote a little verse for Darlene. And so it's crazy because the day we filmed the video, that morning I asked Ice-T to come up there. He didn't know if he could make it. So rest in peace, Lil Tuff came to me when we had filmed the first part of the video, and Lil Tuff came to me. He said, Ice is outside. So that's like big bro. You know, I'm like, man, he's going to make it to my video. So to make a long story short, when he came in with Evil E, Hen-G, Africa Islam, and a few other people may have been with him. So he seen me standing by Darlene. So Lil Tuff came over to me and said, Ice is here. So he came inside. I chopped it up with Ice. Me, Evil E, and Hen-G were standing together. He said, man, who was that? I said, oh, that's Darlene. He said, you know, this was a couple of years before he actually did that cover. And he said, he told her he wanted her on the cover. So I went over to her and walked her over and introduced her, man. And, you know, the rest is history, man. She wound up doing that cover and wound up being this girl, Little Ice, came about, you know, and they had their history together. And, you know, I just thought that was, you know, important for hip-hop because, you know, she did a classic cover, you know. But at that time, you know, a little bit after that, we had Rodney O. There was a lot of people bubbling. And then King T came about. King T came on, you know, Techno Hop and did some stuff. Unknown wound up getting CMW. We had a cat named Devil Daz, but I was more at that time wanting to learn the business, so I was trying to put everything in that one question you asked me. So that's it pretty much in a nutshell when it started.
And you know what was ill about, because I found this out about you today, actually. Now, you was a part of the skit from the Dub C album with the West Coast Granny.
Yeah, that's me. It's funny, man. Rest in peace, Crazy Tunes, man. It's funny, man. I used to, me and Durl with the Curl, and I'm always bring up Russ Parr. Durl with the Curl used to call in, and he was just a regular call in on K-Day back in the day. And me and Dub C and Crazy Tunes, we were super tight in the 80s. This was before Dub got his deal, before Crazy Tunes became the DJ that he became. I would go over there and I would play on the answer machine. When I would call him and I'd say I was on my way, I would do a granny voice. And Tunes fell in love with it. He thought that was so funny. But in the morning on our way to school, because I was still in school, I would call Russ Parr, the K-Day in the morning on the Russ Parr show, and I would do that granny character. So he would let me call in the morning, and Durl with the Curl would do his thing. And it used to be a trip. We'd get on the school bus to go to school, and people used to really think it was a granny. So me and Dub C started doing these hood mixtapes. And Crazy Tunes said, man, we going to put granny on the mixtape. He seen it. I thought it was real corny. But Tunes was like, man, if we ever get a record deal, you're going to do that on our record. And sure enough, man, everything he said, you know, the classic one is the everybody still talks about the Shadiest One skit. They say that's one of the best skits in hip-hop, man. And, I that's a privilege, man, because I've seen that blossom from us doing four-track mixtapes in Dub C's living room to him being a multi-platinum artist. And everybody knows about Granny, man, everybody.
Man, look, I mean, that's dude, I'm like, we're getting all of this and we're not even a full hour in. I mean, a shout out, rest in peace, of course, to DJ Crazy Tunes, man.
My little bro, man.
A living legend, man.
His mixtapes were ill.
I mean, he was a legend out there, man. I mean, so, you know, you all are getting that buzz out there. I mean, so, of course, you know, at the time, you know, you're talking about, you know, you mentioned DJ Unknown. I mean, you know, you got this, you know, other guy from Compton. You know, I think you heard of him, Roger McBride, a.k.a. King T.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you got DJ Quick. You know, you got Compton's Most Wanted. You know,
oh, yeah.
Of course, you know, yeah, I mean, what was it like in terms of really seeing these guys along the way just come on along and do their thing as well, in addition to y'all? I mean, because you all basically launched a whole new movement of the West Coast, along with, you know, yeah. NWA started, and y'all just followed tradition. What was that like?
Oh, yeah. What's crazy, man, me being a young kid, I seen the foundation laid, and it's a true blessing, because I used to go up to McCullough Records, and that's the pressing, that's where they used to press the vinyls, and just seeing the game, how it worked, the independent game. So I was pretty much ahead of the playing, you know, I was really ahead of the pendulum, because I seen Unknown used to take me up to McCullough. I've heard the conversations about the records being pressed, just seeing how the game worked, and seeing Lonzo, World Class Record Crew, seeing Raj, they going up there, Egyptian Lover. I've seen people going up there and just seeing them conversing with the people who was running McCullough, seeing the negative side and the positive side of it, you know. So to see it blossom from McCullough Records into Egyptian Lover doing his own thing, Rodney O doing his own thing, Unknown, you know, I was there, you know, and it's something that I'll take to my death, man, because I witnessed, and it kept me out of the streets. You know, I never gangbang or nothing like that, man, because I fell in love with the culture. And I seen, you know, a lot of people get in this game and push and represent the culture in its most beautiful way, man. So, I mean, I can go on and on about my experiences and finally getting on a plane for the first time. Hip-hop did that. You know, getting on a stage in front of thousands of people, hip-hop did that. Not getting involved in the gangs and staying away from that, hip-hop did that. So I really embrace this culture, and I'm adamant about educating people about the business side of it, because I was there. I'm a first generation hip hop head from the West. You know, I don't look my age, but I was there here when it started, man. So I mean, I can go on and then seeing Quick and Second to None doing their thing with Greedy Greg, you know, seeing Tone Loc and Young MC doing their thing over at Delicious Vinyl, seeing the Dream Team, Rudy Party and Snake Puppy doing their thing. I was right there. Like, even on my Instagram page, I got a flyer from 1985. You see my name on there. That stuff means a lot to me because it shows my stuff is documented. You know, I was here, man, seeing it blossom. But I just had a real passion for learning and getting on the business side. So my artist career was brief because I was more interested in learning the ins and outs on the business side. If I ask the question,
yeah.
I know I'll get to go. Yeah.
No, and it's all good. That's what, look, we got plenty of time, Jazzy. You are perfectly fine. You know, kick your feet up, relax. You know, you home. So, I mean, in terms of it, what did you, because you had an acumen, well, an enthusiasm, which is always important first, because one has to have the desire to have the lessons before they are actually taught. And then from once the academics are instilled in you, then that shows the savvy and acumen necessary to sustain knowledge that is bestowed upon you. So tell us about the first time you really got into it from a business aspect in terms of like really seeing paperwork, seeing contracts, understanding the language, because what you've done as a manager, we're going to get into that as the show goes on, I mean, is extraordinary. Tell us about those nascent days, those early beginnings of when you really began to understand how the business worked in terms of your point, percentages, distribution, you know, all that stuff.
Well, when I first got in the game, no disrespect to DJ Unknown, he didn't, and as I got older, I start really understanding when you sign with an independent label or a major label, it's not their jobs to educate you. So as a young kid from South Central, you know, I came in the game, you know, I really didn't care about the business side when I first got in it. I didn't know about if I wrote a song, I'm supposed to get writer's credit. I didn't know anything about publishing. I was so wet behind the ear when it came to publishing. I used to think when they asked about publishing, that's when they printed up your flyers and put them up, you know, your billboards and snipes, you know, up and down the street. So when people talked about publishing, that's what I thought at a young age. I'm thinking, oh, that's a flyer. That's where they post your flyers or your bill, you know, the snipes up and down the street. And then as I start really getting to understand the ins and outs and getting around the Quincy Jones and different people, I start saying, oh, there's a serious business side to this. And I was always 10, 15 steps ahead because I asked, at that time, I asked the right questions at the wrong time. And we'll get into that.
Gotcha.
But I was always a little ahead of my time once I really started asking the questions and I started understanding publishing, writer's credits, how to fill out split sheets, because this was before streaming and all that, all this digital stuff. So I learned the game before it transitioned to where it is now. You know, but my first few contracts were, I thought, was the worst contracts of all time, but they gave me the opportunity to learn the game. And I'm not bitter at this age. You know, I know the game now, you know. It was a learning process.
Yeah.
Now, what did you see in those contracts that made you like, okay, something needs to change right here because these artists aren't really getting their fair share? Or then again, you have the mentality of you are what you negotiate.
Yeah, you know, in every contract, at the bottom of the contract, it basically tells you to get a professional to read over it. You talking about a little kid that grew up, man, I grew up in South Central, man, on the west side. I grew up on Slauson and Dinker, man. So if you go across Western going west, you talking about 60s and Crips. If you go on Western and Slauson going east, going towards Normandy, you talking about and deeper going towards Gage, you talking about 8 Trays, 6 Dudes,
yeah,
you know, 5-8. So man, I was surrounded by, I don't want to say negative, man, these little misguided youth, man. And do you know, I heard people say, you know, oh, you know, you a victim of your environment, man. Everybody knew I was never affiliated, never got caught up in the gang thing, because every gang that I just named, they said, man, stick to your music. So all that stuff about them trying to recruit you, they never tried to recruit me, you know. And I was a good fighter. I used to love fighting. So I was prime, you know, recruiting bait, but they never approached me. I'm talking about no Crips, no Bloods ever approached me to get involved in the gang. They said, man, stick to your music, man, because they heard me on the radio. They heard me doing my thing. So I really took to heart, and a lot of the gang members stayed on me. They said, man, stick to your music. You don't want to get caught up in this. And so that's why I share this game. You know, I don't do it as openly as I used to, but I share this game because I did not know the business. I just was happy to get on the bus after high school, after school let out, and go to the Radiotron. And I won't say I was the first guy on the West Coast, but I hadn't heard of anybody in 1985 teaching a hip-hop class. I taught a hip-hop class at Radiotron, so it wasn't just about me getting on stage and rapping and, you know, impressing the young ladies and having the little young guys look up to me. I taught a hip-hop class, you know, and I won't say I was the first because I don't know what they were doing in Compton. I don't know what they were doing in other places, but I, you know, actually taught a hip-hop class.
Man, and, you know, you're doing this, you know, Jazzy, at a time, you know, especially, you know, when we mentioned, you know, when you mentioned A-Trays, you know, rest in peace, Mad Dog Cody. I mean, you mentioned 60s, you know what I'm saying? Rest in peace, Nipsey. Shout out G.I. Joe, Pac-Man, Jay Stone, you know, all, you know, the hoods out there, man. You know, you mentioned Normandy. I mean, you got Florence, Central. Yeah. I mean, man, what else? Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, the beautiful thing, man, I know somebody from every single set, man, and I've never had a problem, man. Everybody know, man. I'm in this music, my conversation is always educating yourself about this business, because I learned at a young age, the game is not, that's why I told you, I was bitter for a long time, but as I got older, no matter what label you go to, at the bottom of those agreements, it tells you to seek professional help. And then I start realizing...
Right.
A contract is a negotiable piece of work. You do not have to agree with it. But see, we young kids coming, some of us coming out of Watts, Compton, Long Beach, South Central, Pomona. You know, we just happy. We lucky to ever had $100 bill. So we signed. We were getting crumbs. You know, and to get back to the question earlier, you said the contracts were terrible because we didn't know anything about warehousing. They was charging us for warehousing. They was charging us for all these returns for these albums that we never seen. We didn't know anything about the agreements, and the attorneys were appointed to us from the label. So the attorneys 90% of the time is in bed with the label. We didn't know that. We just happy to do shows and get on a plane for the first time and go somewhere else and see all these different cities and individuals inspired and really looking up to the West Coast. I mean, they admired the West Coast, you know, going to New York. And I was so excited when I went to New York to see the trains with the graffiti on it, because that's when it was at its peak, the breakdancing, and they embracing us. And they, hey, what's up, Jazzy? I'm like, man, y'all know my name? Like, yeah, man, we, you know, they wasn't really spinning our records like that then, but they knew me, you know, and it blew my mind, man, to come back and to see that's where the Crips and the Bloods that knew me, They love to crowd around me and hear my stories. I'm like, man, you went to New York. They banging. They out there in the front lines doing their thing. So when I come home, I bring a different atmosphere. Like, dang, you just went to New York. I'm like, yeah, and I'm telling them when I was in New York, you know, how we a couple of the guys from New York was our tour guides taking us to the different barrels. That blew my mind, man, because in school I'm hearing Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, Prince, Whip a Whip, and all these guys, and then I'm seeing them beating these dudes, man. I can't even describe what I was going through as a teenager in high school, man.
Wow, man.
You looking at the mecca of hip hop at a young age, man, because you starting to really see the renaissance. And this is what we had a show yesterday. We was talking to Pop the Brown Hornet from Wu-Tang. That was the real golden era right there with the 80s, because everybody was just flourishing. The skill set, the bar was getting set.
Man, we have a strong culture here, and no disrespect to the youngsters that's doing their thing now, but I really feel that, you know, I'm not saying, it's up to us, the guys that have been around, to really let them know we sacrificed a whole lot. we, you know, me to this day, I'm still pushing this streaming and a lot of this stuff that's going on. But I'm not saying I'm doing it by myself, but I'm on a lot of Zoom calls. I'm talking to a lot of people, big people at Spotify, people that work at Sound Exchange, Harry Fox. I'm, you know, we do Zoom calls and employees from those organizations are on the phone and they just hear me, you know, they not, and I'm not saying some managers, their reason for getting in this is different than mine. It's more than management to me. It's more than me administrating. It's more than me booking my artists for shows. It's more than that to me because we are in a state of emergency when it comes to business here. And we'll get into that, but this mm-hmm. is more than just hip hop to me. I have a passion to educate people. Some still don't get it, but we are in a state of emergency when it comes to business and understanding this music industry. A lot of people, and mainly the youngsters right now, their education and their knowledge of the business is not important to them. And I want to, I mean, not just me, but I want to really get them to understand the business side of this so they won't have so many sad stories that we had, us in our 50s, middle 50s, and late 40s that have been in the game a long time. If they listen to the ones that really know, that want them to learn, they won't make the mistakes that we made.
I made sure T-Max is there. Yeah, I had to make sure. You there, T-Max?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, man, but that's real, though. And I mean, the thing about it is you always want to be, you know, where, you know, you may have made your tracks and your mistakes along that way. It's important
mm-hmm.
if you are able to hold tight.
Exactly. Yeah, man, it's like when you, it's like that's the key element of business. It's like we came with a lot of time with music, but the business side plays a vital role because when you dead and gone, you wanted your family to own that stuff. You know what I'm saying? You want the family to own
exactly.
that catalog.
Exactly. And see, in the way music has transitioned from when we were doing it, a lot of the language isn't the same. So that's why my older cats that have been making music, I talk to almost all of them. And we have a lot of conversations. And they say, Jazzy, man, you be educating us and speaking on things that I have no idea, and I share this stuff with them. You know, some listen, some don't, but everybody knows my position in this game has always been education, because a lot of the young people today, they are uploading and putting out music daily without handling the business side, and no disrespect to the managers, but they have the audacity to say they have managers, and that's where I have a problem, because if I'm not jumping ahead, you know, we got almost $3 billion unclaimed royalties that's sitting up because artists continue. And as we're on the phone right now, there's somebody uploading music on a digital platform without it being registered, without it being copywritten, you know, and that money that's accumulated on those platforms is just sitting there. And nobody's listening. No, I'll take that back. It's very few are listening because some get it, but the majority don't. And they don't understand. That's putting us in a position where we're making people billionaires off our hard work. And I just wish the managers out there, because, hey, I don't want the managers to think I'm going hard on them, but we have to do more than think our job as managers is to book shows, do videos, and get on stage with our artists and take our shirts off and lip sing our artists' songs. That's not management to me. You know, I see a lot of managers, and I manage the Eastsiders, and them brothers is soldiers. I've never, since Big Trady came home from prison, him and Goldie, solid dudes, man. They embraced me, brought me on as a manager, you know, Trady's wife is involved in what we're doing, but I've never once got on stage with any artist, not just the Eastsiders, anybody that I've ever represented. I make sure that envelope is handed out to us before any of my artists even come to an arena or come to the show. That first deposit is sent over, and I, before my artists even hit the venue, that envelope is in my hand. Not only that, my job is not to get on stage and lip sync my artist's songs, because I know every last bit of their songs. If we're in another city or if we doing a big venue, I'm trying to find out who's the program director at this radio station, who's the promoter that promotes in this city. I'm building relationships. That's just me. I'm not one of those managers that's getting on stage with my artists. I make sure they have their cordless mics. I make sure the system is right for them to get up there and rock the stage. We get paid, and it's on to the next show. You will never see Jazzy on stage unless they say, Jazz, we need this or whatever. But I'm never get on the stage and lip sync my artist songs, take my shirt off with the styrofoam cup with the drink in it and all that. I'm behind stage, you know, I'm behind stage building relationships, man. And if I'm not on stage, I'm on the phone trying to figure out our next move, you know, like, I don't know.
That's another problem today. That's another problem with today is that you got a lot of managers. They want to be more so the stars than the artists.
That's where I was getting at without saying it, you know, but to each his own. I don't want to throw managers under the bus. Me personally, you'll never see me on stage with my artists because I'm just, and anybody that know me, I'm a real one. I believe in doing good business, never took nothing from nobody. But the thing is, we got to stop having titles. You think we got $3 billion of unclaimed royalties sitting up with artists that continue to put out music without it being copywritten, without it being registered, without them joining the right organizations to get that revenue. And we have the nerve to have managers. All I'm saying is sometimes you may be a manager in training, but you're not quite a manager yet. Stop giving yourself titles because we are in a state of emergency. There's artists every day upload music on digital platforms or on social media playing a portion of their song. You know, that all generates anything you put out there commercially has a revenue stream. And stop having your homeboys, your aunties, your cousins, your mothers, your fathers giving them a management position when they really don't know. Some managers, you ask them what a PRO is, they don't know what it is. You ask them what an ISRC code is, they say, oh, that's my attorney handles that. You mean to tell me you having a management position and you getting 15 to 20% and you don't know 90% of what it takes to be a manager? I speak on that, man, and a lot of guys don't like it. They talk a lot of mess, but I'm telling you, there's a lot of money being unclaimed. A lot of these artists that's walking around and still having 9-to-5 probably don't realize they have a lot of money sitting up somewhere.
Man, Jazzy, and that's what I was saying earlier about the mischief in management, because a lot of times, one thing about it, and King and myself, we've been blessed to do this for so long, talking to so many people, learning so many things. Two things before, number one, when you said earlier about the contracts, when they say you should always have sufficient legal representation, it is actual. We've seen what those contracts look like.
I
will never forget Styles T. It was some years ago in XXL magazine. He was saying, when you get a contract, it's a whole, it's like 100 pages of fucking words nobody can understand. You know, and he was alluding to the situation that had went on with Puffy at the time. We can only speak on this because we know what actually happened. But another thing too, Jazzy, and King and myself, we've always talked about this on air and off air. Your management is a professional representation of how your business is conducted. And if anything, when you're going into any situation, you want your business to be taken seriously, because if you got a manager all up in the videos and the stage, lip syncing, dancing,
all on YouTube, Clubhouse,
all over YouTube, talking trash about people, about what he gonna do. I'm like, dude, you talking more than your artists. I'm like, what's going on here?
Your representation is your reputation. Like I said earlier, I rock with the managers. You know, I even thought about getting jackets and getting shirts and this is for managers, your rep, and for the artists, when you hire a manager, your representation is your reputation. So if I'm representing the Eastsiders, if I'm representing any artist, you know, when I go into that meeting, I try to present myself in the most professional manner as possible, not keeping the street. You know, I know how to go from street to corporate. I'm a street dude, 100%.
Right.
I know how to lead that street shit in the street, and I know how to go in here,
right,
and I've negotiated deals. And it's a shame my own people don't embrace that. In other words, what they see is you as competition. When you're an educated street dude, you with the business in them streets, and you know how to go in there and close them deals and suit yourself up, it seemed like you would be embraced by your own people. That's where we still got a long way to go, because we generate so much money in this culture, but we don't stick together. Because if all the managers just came together, we could be our own Live Nation. We could do our own shows. We don't need, and no disrespect to any of those, those promotion companies, the promoters. But I'm saying, if we really come together, we can really be a force in this culture. But when you have an educated person that know how to suit up, that smell good, well-groomed, and know how to go in there and talk, that talk on a business level, and then put on a sweatsuit and handle his business and ain't scared of nothing in them streets, it seemed like our people should embrace us and be like, man, this is the spokesperson. He can bring in more soldiers and groom them up and show them how to go in here. But I get more hate than anything, man. And they don't keep that energy when you see them, but it's a shame, man, and no disrespect to our people. But we are such a talented, beautiful group of people, but we need to unify and come together more. These contracts, look, we can create our own labels. We can create our own social media platforms. But we make everybody else rich, and then when somebody come in that know the code to the Matrix, they down us, man. And not saying everybody, but I see what's going on. I see where the money is being set up. And I tell my people, I pull them to the side. I say, stop putting music on iTunes. Stop putting music on these digital platforms. And I have my team say, man, look, you're forcing this game on people. Only talk to people that's willing to embrace it and utilize it. And that's what I've done. My team was on me, man. Like, hey, I learned every day also. They said, man, if you really followed my Instagram page, I just deleted a whole lot of game off there, because some of these cats don't deserve to get this free game like that. The people that's tuning into this is gonna get a whole lot of good information. That's why I took that information off the page, because if we came together, I tell people all the time, I don't just tell you not to upload it, I tell you why you shouldn't upload music on those platforms without properly handling your business. And do you know, I say 90% of them don't listen. And I said, my team, it finally hit me, like, man, you know what? Stop trying to throw that in people's face that don't want the game. And that's where I changed,
right,
man.
And, you know, Jazzy, this has always been a lament. And like you said, you know, we love, you know, our blackness. We love our people. But there is also a divide in terms of those who have certain academics and those
that
don't,
man.
And this has been a situation, and I don't want to get on the soapbox preaching, but this is an issue in terms of when you look at the cultural divide in our community in terms of those who were fortunate enough, because education and academics is accessible for everybody. It might not necessarily be at the same levels, but any type of knowledge you gain is something that it is a gain. You know, whatever you get is a gain. And when you choose to stay ignorant, that's an insult to your, you know, existence. But yet and still, people will want to erase your existence for their lack of knowledge that they want to see you perish from because you have knowledge.
Come on,
you
man.
Know?
Right. You know what's sad? And I'm going to speak on it because I don't give a damn. I don't give a
Go
damn.
Ahead, please.
Say. You know what's sad, man? I had on Wednesday night at my studio that I closed down 2 years ago, on Wednesday night, I didn't discriminate, man. I had little cats that was getting out of juvenile hall, that was getting out of county jail, getting out of jail. Some guys did a long time. And they were like, man, you shouldn't have this Hispanic gang, and you got that. Hey, man, do you know, and I'm not saying I'm no Superman, do you know I never had a problem? I had people from that was Bloods, Pacoima Pirus.
I had cats with East Coast Crips. I had Brims. I had
ECC,
you name it, man.
190 Block.
Yeah, all coming to my studio at the same time. I talk to them downstairs. I say, look, man, I don't want none. And people are like, man, you talk to them like that? It wasn't that I was disrespecting them. I said, man, look, don't bring that BS in my studio because they seen I was doing something. Do you know I never made a dime? I ordered pizza. I had sodas in there. And I told them, when they came in, we didn't turn on the equipment the first couple of hours. I was teaching them how to copyright their music, how to fill out a split sheet, how to do this and that. And you would think other people with names in the game that I know, because I got a catalog of superstars in my phone, which means nothing to me. That's why you don't see no celebrities on my Instagram page, because people, man, you got to put some pictures, make your Instagram page look, make my Instagram page look fake. But what I'm saying that to say, I hit up a few cats and I said, man, look, every now and then, because y'all come up to my studio and talk to these little cats, eventually I started managing and started doing a lot of other things. And to this day, I hate that I didn't keep that going. But it was not saying I was doing it by myself, because I had a few people helping. But you got to understand, these people had families. They were driving from L.A., some of them driving from Compton to come all the way out to Sylmar, where my studio was, on the corner of Hubbard and Glen Oaks. For almost 20 years, I had a studio there, and I never made a dime there. And you would think people would be like, man, Jazzy, do you know I didn't do it to get a pat on the back? That's why I don't take pictures and put them on my Instagram. I don't go to shows, and that's just not me. No disrespect to people that like taking pictures. But see, I have a bigger purpose in this game. I was a young guy that made records that didn't know what publishing was, didn't know what a copyright was, didn't know what ownership of the masters was, all that. Now we got even a new thing, and here it is. There's nobody old or new in this game that can say I ever came around them and didn't say, learn how to copyright your, this is how you copyright. You got people, when you walk away, ah, fuck Jazzy, blah, blah, blah. But they ain't going to say it in my face. And I'm, like I said, I'm not no Crip, no Blood. I ain't affiliated with nothing. But keep the same energy, because can't nobody say, when I'm around them, old or young, hey, learn about the business side of this game. Because it's more to it than fun hitting the strip clubs and doing all that. It's very serious right now. You do not need a label to be a millionaire. And a lot of artists are still not getting the foundation of this game as far as the business. And that's what's killing me. My passion
and you know what,
20 years. You can go, because I'll get to going.
No, I'm saying building off that, I'm saying what's wild is that when I was working with promotions and everything, you will see a lot of the toughest guys that you portray on wax, but yet when they go to a business meeting or when they sit across that table with a lot of these execs, they can't even come up with, they can't even talk to these execs the proper way. They can't even write a decent email. And you know, in this business, you know, write a decent email alone can get your head at the door. And it's like these guys, you know, they're the toughest dandadas on record, but yet in these boardrooms, they get timid. You know what I'm saying?
You know, I'm going to tell you why. Because really, no disrespect, those guys, you got to look at, I mean, the real ones, because I won't even get into the gangster rap today, but the gangster, the rappers back then, man, you can't expect them to write a professional email. A lot of them really, the ones that really did prison time, the ones that, the Bloods that don't use the C and the Crips that don't use the B in certain words, they really write like that. But it ain't that they do it on purpose. It becomes repetitious because in prison and in the environment they grew up in, that is the reason why they get a misconception of a manager. They hire a good friend, a dude probably like myself that was never affiliated with that was kind of smart, you know, and they expect the manager to do that. And unfortunately, a lot of these managers are not knowledgeable and don't know how to conduct themselves in meetings. And no disrespect to managers, because there's some, and I can name some that I take my hat off to that I salute. It's just the way I move is differently, you know. I move a little different, you know. So all I'm saying is a lot of those artists, they're not in the position. A lot of them shouldn't even open their mouths at the meeting. They should have somebody that's, see, if you put a team together, you say, okay, when we go to these meetings, you got certain individuals that should not be in meetings. That's not their position. They should never go. and you got certain people that should only work social media. And then you got your chosen few that will go to the meetings, that's very articulate, that know how to speak and understand the language. Because you can be articulate and not know the language. Like I said, there's a lot of managers that don't even know what a PRO is. So I could go to school and get 20 years of education. But when they get to talking that language, they don't know. And that's what I'm saying. And then instead of a manager embracing a Jazzy or embracing a manager that's knowledgeable of the language and know how to conduct themselves, these niggas get intimidated. They see you as competition. They go in studios and don't know 20% of the people in the studio going to call you as soon as you leave the studio. Man, I seen you at the club with so-and-so, but in the studio, he was talking bad about you. That's when we got bad out here. Then when you go, when you see him somewhere, hey, what's up, Jazzy? And that's what made me look at this game differently, because I am a street dude. So when people tell me, the people that I embraced and I had love for, talking about me for no reason at all in a studio, I move differently. I look at them individuals differently because my purpose is different. I'm not into chasing the women. I'm not into going to strip clubs. I don't hang out after event. When my artists perform, I'm gone. I don't go to a lot of events. I don't just show up at people's recording session, because this is a business to me, and I'm very serious about it, and I'm going to cut off a different cloth. And my purpose in this is we have to take over and understand the business side of this, because we've sent in other people's grandchildren to high school, college, and letting them start up businesses, and they're creating generational wealth while we living day to day buying things that depreciate as soon as we buy them. We're not educated on finances, and that's what I'm trying to change in this game. This culture is making too much money for us to be in the position that we're in. How are we in a position where we can say there's probably 4 certified billionaires from hip-hop when we're making damn near $1 trillion? Come on, man.
And that's real, Jazzy, because one thing about it, man, when you look at the industry itself, because we gotta touch on all the key points you said about in terms of having a team. You think about the 96 Chicago Bulls with Phil Jackson as the coach and how everybody had their role and everybody could do their role well. You have Michael, who was a superstar. You have Scotty, who was a perfect wingman. Dennis, who did the dirty work rebounding. You have Steve Kerr, who's still to this day, quick off the cuff knowledge for those, because we always try to give it from all levels. Steve Kerr to this day is still the highest percentage 3-point shooter in NBA history. You had Jeb Bushler, who could shoot as well, Bill Winnington. You had the whole team, Randy Brown as a defensive stopper. Everybody on the team knew their role, and everybody was comfortable with their role. And as Bill Belichick would say for the Patriots with their dynasty, he had 3 basic words that it tell everything: do your job. And the problem is sometimes, man, what you said earlier about, heads coming from the hood not really being exposed to much, when you see a certain type of life, a different kind of exposure, it can be intoxicating because you're infused with this sudden exposure to all the things you only saw about on television or heard about from other people. So when certain people get into that life, and King and myself have seen it, especially with his background as a journalist, you see a lot of people who are more than anything, they got an avarice attitude, a selfish motivation, that their thing is they're going to be at the top by any cost, and damn whoever gets in their way.
Man.
And
you right, man. You just touched on something that's sad, though, but you're absolutely right.
And you know what? It started around the 90s, where you started to really see a lot of big money coming to hip-hop. Like the mid-90s, that is. Like 90s. I'll probably even go back to that when they started introducing SoundScan.
Yeah,
and
that was in 1991. 1991 was SoundScan. Yeah.
Yeah. You're exactly right. And you see, it's very, very cool that you said that, because you go into SoundScan, and then they came up with the ISRC codes, and then they came up with the BDS broadcast data system. All these things were intricate pieces that really need – and if you're a manager, I don't care what manager gets mad at me. I don't give a damn. if another manager tell me his attorney handles that, you got an artist that you getting 15 to 20% and you don't know what a PRO is. You don't know what an ISRC code is. You don't know what BDS is. You don't even know the difference between a mechanical royalty and what pays out from your PRO. And that's very important. So you are going to get 15 to 20% of this artist's revenue that's generated off this artist, and you don't even fucking know how you're going to get paid. And that bothers me, and that's what make a lot of these fake-ass managers out here have an attitude and say stuff, but they don't keep that same energy when I see them. But if we embrace each other, and it ain't that I'm throwing them under the bus. I just get sick of hearing them say, oh, my attorney handles that. And half the time, these artists don't realize they've already created the buzz, and they've already created that momentum in their career. And that manager is just coming on to something that the artist already created anyway. So why not have somebody come on your team that's knowledgeable? Now, that person may not be ready to be a manager, but he plays an important part on the team. But these niggas is walking around calling themselves managers. That's why you don't see me a whole lot, because I don't bite my tongue, and I'm tired of people saying they managers. That's just like you standing next to a person that went to college for math as a math major, and you standing next to him and telling him you went to school for a math major, and he says a few figures at you, and you can't even answer. Right off the bat, you'll know if he's telling he's BSing or whatever. That's how I am, man. And there's a lot of people and shake hands and what's up, Jazzy. No, man, don't hate the fact that somebody is knowledgeable in this game, because I always go back to $3 billion of unclaimed royalty sitting up because we got fathers, mothers, homeboys, homeboy managers, auntie managers that don't really know the game and look at the condition that we're in. R&B and hip-hop artists are very known and on a regular basis for putting out music without laying the found without copyrighting it, without registering it. So when those streaming platforms come time to issue out the payment, it's non-directed. It sits there because they have nowhere to send it to, because those artists they don't even know what a copyright is. You got managers that still think you can write your lyrics down on a paper and mail it to yourself. Get the fuck out of here. Or put it on a CD and put it in an envelope and mail it to yourself. Yeah, you are the copyright owner as soon as it's in a tangible form or all that shit, but this is a money game. Go on and pay the little money and do it the right way. If another nigga tell me he done copyrighted his stuff by putting it in the envelope and mailed it to himself, I'm going to fall out, man. Come on, y'all. Come on,
well,
man.
And hold on, Jazz, because before we get further with it, because we don't want to interrupt your momentum, but we also got to touch on this for what you were saying in the process of all that, because the fact is, like when Big said, no need to worry, my accountant handles that, there's a difference between your accountant and your attorney. Your attorney handles litigation. Your accountant counts the money. Mm-hmm. They are two separate entities in terms of duty. You do not have one doing the job that two men should be doing. Secondly, as you were saying, also, too, this does not only extend to music. Once again, we're only going to speak on this because it was documented. The situation that happened with Vince Young, played for the University of Texas, star quarterback, and he had his uncle in charge of his money, and there was a lot of documented issues in terms of how that money was mismanaged. And unfortunately, Vince, you know what I'm saying, got into some financial ruin behind it. You know, and the thing is that this is something people have to understand, y'all. For those that's listening out there, thank you tuning in. You have people who may be in your family, but they not in your favor. You know, and they related to you, but they not real with it.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, to go back to what you said too, I want to touch on, I have an entertainment attorney, and he's as needed. I try to learn as much as I can, so I don't have to pay that retainer to him. But I know enough to where I very seldom have to use my entertainment attorney. So to go back to that, I say certain things that a manager should know, you can't always put on your attorney. But I'm not against us having, you know, legal representation, so I wanted to clear that up.
Oh, no. The thing is, that's important because you always, but the thing is, you learn as much as you can. But the thing is, the difference between genius and smart, smart thinks they know everything. Genius knows they don't know everything and get someone to help them become smart in that capacity to become a genius.
Exactly. You're absolutely right.
You know, but that is something that...
You're right.
You know, but that's something that people really have to understand. It's okay to not know something, and it's okay to ask for help. And a lot of times, you know, people get caught up trying to show, well, I know this, that, and what, other than
it's that ego,
it's okay,
man,
to say you don't know. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they don't want to be seen. They don't want to be seen as a dummy. They yeah, go and ahead and they try to jump. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I totally agree with you.
But at the same time, like, look, call me a dummy if this deal that I'm negotiating is life or death for me. I'm gonna ask every question there is. Forget who people perceive me as.
Yeah, you know, I'm just blessed. The people I have around me are a real team. I play my position, they play their positions. Even if we're on a conference call and we don't, it's a lot of times we don't agree. But when we hang up that phone, we family, and it's on to the next move. We don't air our business out on social media. You know, that's a real team. Any discrepancies or, you know, if we don't agree, it's all before we hang up the phone. Before we hang up the phone, it's taken care of. You know, but I don't know.
Right.
I don't, you know, certain people, some people, the majority of people in the music business today want to be famous. And it's very few that want to be successful. You know, I get at those ones that want to be successful. Because there's so many famous.
Oh,
you know, everybody
want
to be famous. But there's not a lot of people that want to be successful. I mean, you know, that's a difference, you know. And people need to really start thinking about that. Do you want to be famous or do you want to be successful? I'm pointing my attention towards the people that want to be successful. And I stopped dealing with famous people. That's why you don't see me a whole lot, man.
And one thing about it too, Jazzy, that's always important because you don't want to become a fixture. It's like it's one of the laws that Robert Greene wrote in his book about know when to disappear. You know, when you become too visible, you become a habit. People get used to seeing you all the time. You have to know when to step away in the shadows. You want to be that clandestine figure that when he steps out, it means something, you know, for a long time. And we affectionately, respectfully call him the old man, Jay Prince. For a long time, you didn't really see Jay Prince out there like that.
Yeah, you're right.
But when
you're
not.
But when he came out, it was for a reason. He wrote in his book, I'm not a person to talk a lot, and when I make a point, I make it quick and clear.
Exactly, man.
You know,
I mean, anybody that know me, man, I ain't never, you know, not to put a 10 on the 2 on my toughness and all that. If you see me, I'm not the biggest guy. I don't bench 450 pounds. I don't have 40-inch arms. But I'm not turning down nothing. I'm not stupid, you know, but I'm not scary when it comes to them streets. And I do not have to get on the internet and prove my toughness. My street credibility, what I've done with my hands in certain times, is documented. So I don't have to prove anything. Right now, my focus is leaving a legacy for my children and my grandchildren and my family before I leave the face of this earth. And I'm on the right track because I'm around the right people. I'm not letting nobody push me off my square and make me lose my freedom or make me lose my life. I stay solid and can't nobody say I ain't did nothing, you know, salty or no fugazi weird shit out there to nobody. I walk these streets in this industry with my chin high and my chest out. And I ain't scared of shit, but I know we have to really start making a change when it comes to business in this game because there's too many people eating off our hard work. And if people don't like that, my purpose is changing that and getting with the people that want to be successful, that want to know, hey, we are in a position, we got people that know the game or know somebody that can change that. Because look, they robbing us blind with these streams. It's like you have a car and you want to like E or T, y'all have a car and you come to me, you say, hey man, I got this 64 Chevy, I done put $150,000 into it, we know you good at selling cars, sell a car for it, but you gonna know, okay, but I want this amount. It's like we taking our cars, our custom cars, which is our music, to these people, and we let them dictate what they're going to give us for our cars. That's like taking your child somewhere and you know, just letting somebody else just do whatever they want with your child. This music is our child. It's our children. It's our family. And when did it got to a point now where we accepting anything? They pay us on the penny for our songs. When you used to go into a mom and pop store and you got a 45, you know you paying $2 for it. If you got a 12 inch vinyl, you know you was paying $4.50 for it. Now we don't know what we going into the studio, sacrificing, spending time with our families, sacrificing, spending time, you know, going to events, you know, with our family events to do this thing we call hip hop or this thing we call music. And we are creating all this wonderful stuff, and we letting somebody else dictate how much they're going to pay us. And if enough of us come together and go to these individuals and tell them, this is what we want, we can pull our music off those platforms. And really, like they did back in the 60s, boycotted riding them damn buses and stuff. We don't realize how much of a force we are in this music industry. We settling for anything. We letting them piss on us and tell us it's raindrops. And that shit's not cool, man.
And you're
right. Man, I'm going to tell you this, man. I was going to tell y'all this, man. Like, it saddened me to see, you know, the company that of Death Row Records, which was like a $100 million company in 1996-97, bought out by a toy company.
Hey, man,
yeah.
We could get so deep into that. There's a reason for all of that. You had Murder, Inc. You had No Limit. You had Death Row. Who else you had? And the list goes on. You know, Lynch Mob. The list goes on. You know, it goes back to, and the phone call might drop when I say this. It goes back to our strong, powerful men in the industry trying to put them in dresses. Do I need to go any further? These companies start prospering and making money. And a lot of people say those individuals didn't pay their artists. There's a purpose behind everything, man. We can only go so far up in this business, and I'll stop there because I can go on and on about that, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
the reason why I brought that up was because we was talking about the era of Mystique. And then, you know, that's what Suge had at that time. Like, he had an air of mystique about him, man. Once he got out there, he got a taste of the light. It's kind of like that's when things kind of started going down.
Yeah, man. It's like you gotta understand in this business, no matter how tough we are, we're not the ones in control, unfortunately. So
right. You
have to know. And I'm not saying compromise your manhood because I would never do that. I'm not compromising my manhood. Nothing. But at the end of the day, we have to understand that you have to understand the value of knowing how to go from street to corporate. You know, going there before they know you coming there and handled your business, before they knew you done manipulated them and got it the way you wanted to, you done already got it. We can't go in there with the attitude of just taking shit. We can't do that. We can't.
And that's true. And when you talk about, you know, how the game is, Jazz, you know what I'm saying? I think that definitely, you know, the conviction, the passion you speak with your voice definitely goes to your family roots. If I believe Cuban, if I'm not mistaken.
Are you breaking up?
Okay, yeah, in terms of, definitely the conviction you were speaking on definitely is indicative of your family roots in terms of your heritage. Is it Cuban, I believe, or?
Yeah, I got Cuban and Puerto Rican in me, man.
Cuban and Puerto Rican. All right,
Cuban and Puerto Rican. Yeah.
All right, so we got a shout out, you know, Havana, and of course, you know, San Juan, you know, San Juan, Puerto Rico, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So, I mean, yeah. So it's like, you know, so it's definitely, you know, shout out to all our Afro-Caribbeans out there, man.
Exactly.
You know,
come on, man.
One thing about it, man, people got to understand this game from a level because you hit on so many different areas of how it's changed. Two things we want to ask you, Jazzy.
Yeah.
When did the music start? When did the music start changing in terms of when the formula for what was making classics became commercially a tragic comedy of common? You know, it just the soul was lost. And who the hell are the tastemakers dictating the fashion senses? Because back in the day, we were making our own fashion statements. You know what I'm saying? Now it's like we're letting other people dress us in terms of, oh, well, this is how you need to look. Last time I saw hip-hop was born out of a struggle in terms of how we wanted to express ourselves.
Hey, not
somebody
what
telling
it is,
us how.
Bro,
yeah.
You got to get that bag.
Yeah, you know. Hey, you know, if I go deep into that, I'm going to get these different organizations.
Understood.
I'm going to say this, man. Without disrespecting any of the youngsters' manhood, I'm in my 50s and I still can't put on no tight jeans. And people say it's been a changing of the guard. That's, you know, to each his own. But, you know, it's definitely something going on to where they're softening up the tough male image. And, you know, and it's a shame that back in the day, we could have these conversations freely and really speak our mind.
Right.
But now with the different things that's going on, you got to be real careful, you know. And I respect anybody's get down, you know, if that's their thing. But I'm a little disappointed when it comes to hip-hop and what's going on. But like some people say, it's been a changing of the guard. It's a different era. I understand all that because 90% of the cats that they call gangster rap, that, you know, my thing back in the day, I get on this without getting, like I said, the organization telling me I disrespected anybody. But my thing is,
right,
I'm disappointed when it comes to, I got buddies, man, even though I'm not a Crip, not a Blood, never gangbanged a day in my life, I grew up in it. And I don't condone it, but I understand certain things. We got people that's never coming home. They got life. We got people that's on death row. And I know these people. I know these individuals. I looked out for people that did 20, 30 years in the penitentiary. I feel it's disrespectful. And certain things I won't go into and speak on because of the card situation as far as the Crip card and the Blood card. But me personally from Jazzy, I feel it's sad that we got some guys that's never coming home, man, because they dedicated. They were so loyal and true to the no snitching and no none of that. And you look at hip-hop, we got individuals that I know ain't never probably shot a gun until they got famous. I know guys that never probably wore red and knew the history of the red rag or the blue rag and all that. And they're in a position where they're pushing that card. Now, I won't go deep into that, but I feel it's disrespectful to the guys that's never coming home. And I know when I first went to New York in the 80s, if it was Blood and Crip in there, it wasn't promoted like it is now. When I went there, they were more on educating the blacks, you know,
game.
The 5%ers. Yeah, you know, they wasn't with that, man. And I remember, I don't know if it's in the 80s, if I don't know, I took the flyer down, but in 1987, we did a in Denver, Colorado, it was Rodney Owen, Joe Cooley, Cotty T and Mixmaster Spade, Public Enemy, Two Live Crew. I got so educated in the dressing room, and I think I've seen Chuck D one more time since then, but I got so much respect for Chuck D, man. This was in the 80s. He even said the Blood, and he said, man, and on the West Coast, he wasn't being disrespectful. He was just saying how on the East Coast, they wasn't pushing that Blood and Crip thing. You know, he was about, it wasn't just on wax. Chuck D was, man, I got more out of going on stage. I mean, I got more behind the stage than when I got on stage and seen all the people, because I'm like, man, I had a new respect for Chuck D. And when I went to New York, I didn't see Blood and Crip then, you know. And I say that to say, you know, the culture has changed so much, you know, when it comes to just letting certain individuals, I mean, it's freedom of speech. Guys can rap about things, you know, but now the fans are really believing that. And a lot of them dudes ain't what they rapping about, man. And, you know, I won't get too deep into that, but I think the culture has changed a lot. And will it ever go back to where it was? No, but I'm still a KRS-One, Poor Righteous Teachers. You know, I'm still a fan of that. MC Shan, you know, when the battles was just battles. Now, they had fights back then because Prince Whip-A-Whip, shout out to Prince Whip-A-Whip. Whip, you used to educate us. Whip lived on Kingsley,
in an apartment building with Muggs and DJ Aladdin, and I go on the balcony and want to hear Prince Whip a Whip tell me the East Coast stories, man. So I don't know. It's changed a lot.
It's okay, Jazz, because this is where we pick up on our side of it, because we're not going to get inflammatory on our comments either. When you look at it in terms of the gang culture especially, and for anybody who wants to call in and check me, it's okay. You know, I always can admit I'm wrong if I'm wrong. In terms of the Bloods, in terms of New York in the 90s, that didn't become a phenomenon until OG Mac, real name Omar Portee. He was the one that was credited with starting the UBN in New York, the United Blood Nation, which he was from L.A. As far as the history goes, that is not necessarily in direct connection with the Pyrus. For those who don't know, the Pyrus predated the Bloods. The Bloods came later in the 70s. The Pyrus started on Pyru Street before they were, and before they were Crip, before they actually switched over. Y'all need to, for those who don't know, read that history behind how that all happened in terms of some of the original gangs that started that, like the Brims, Mad Family, Swans, all of them. Going into the next part of it, you're dealing with a lot of the gang elements that were in hip-hop. Even then, Jazzy was like, and once again on this show, we can only speak on it because we know this is documented facts. N.W.A., we all know that Eazy-E and Ren were, Kelly Park, Compton, Crip. We know that Compton's Most Wanted was Track New Park, Compton, Crip. You know, we know that DJ Quick was Treetop Pyru. But even then there were hints in terms of the records, in terms of, color splashed or whether blue or red. But it was never necessarily talked about explicitly in terms of sets. You would see come later on. Dub C, we know he's 111 Neighborhood Crip. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Snoop, Rolling 20s, Corrupt, I think he's a 60 as a matter of fact, but the subset was Dogtown Gangsta Crip. For those that don't know, coming out of Long Beach, it's all Crip gangs. There are no Bloods. Shout out to P. Nice and Stupid Young. Zaire Akeem, Trey D, who did the joint on P. Nice's. I'm from Long Beach. But the gang element was something that was spoken on back in the day. When it began to get spoken on was from a real place of dudes who really lived it. All of our Bloods and Bloodettes, Crips and Cripettes. Now we're seeing a situation where they've taken something that, as you said, Jazzy, was meant to be. Because the thing is, people don't understand, and we know real bangers from doing this show. We've met a lot of people from all over who really, really are connected. And one thing about it, they'll tell you, they came in it, but it was not something they glorified. If anything, they're trying to say, look, man, for some of us, this is a lot of stuff. I mean, Trey D, the Source magazine I sent you, he talked about his time in prison, about the stuff he would see going on in the fights when they would break out in the yard, how the Mexicans would slip their knives and shit, and when they hit you, it poisons you. I mean, this is the type of stuff you deal with when you're behind them walls from being in the streets.
Yeah, that's true.
And a lot of times now we're seeing a situation where certain artists all up in the colors, flagging, ain't never put in no work, no real affiliation. Hell, they not even from where they claim it. But yet and still, they got put on.
That's because the perimeter has changed, brother.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. But see,
you don't really have to show and prove no more.
Exactly.
It could be anything.
And you know what? Without me, like I said, I've never been affiliated. But, hey, man, I know some real ones. And it's crazy. The real OGs and the ones that I really looked up to, they don't have Instagram. They don't have Twitter. They've never. And, I've never, since the existence of social media, I've never posted none of my family members, none of my relationships, none of my grandchildren. Don't speak on where I grew up, because it shouldn't be anybody's business. And me, I know I'm a real one. And if something go down, it won't be no easy access. And I'm not saying that to say I'm a hardcore criminal and all that, but it's just certain morals that I have.
You just with the shit when social necessary.
Media. Yeah, exactly, man. I've never posted my children, and they know. I've explained to them. I've never posted my mother. I don't go into restaurants and take pictures of my food when I'm in a restaurant. my purpose is different than a lot of other people's purpose, you know, and that's just what it is, man. Like, I get down way different than a lot of other people, man. And the hip-hop thing, certain people's reality is other people's entertainment, man. You got cats that are never coming home. You got cats that really have to, you know, watch themselves. They not concerned about getting on social media and creating pages on Facebook and all that, because they really done did some stuff in them streets where, you know, they got to live with that for the rest of their life. And I'm not saying that to say, you know, everybody should follow suit that's real ones. No, I'm not saying that, but it seemed like this buffoonery is getting accepted. I mean, even you got cats that do unloyal shit to people and still be accepted in certain circles. And that blows my mind, but it doesn't surprise me, you know. I still feel like, anyway, I won't even get into that, man.
It's okay. One thing about it, though, Jazzy, when you look at history, what a lot of times about the situation, and you obviously are in Cali, you're in L.A., you knew about this situation, supposedly, you know, what Suge told, you know, Easy about he knew where his mother lived. You know, when that whole situation went down, this is always something that I will never, ever forget. It's an old Japanese proverb. An assassin rarely comes from a distance. And that has a broader meaning when you think about it, because an assassin, in the sense where it says it could rarely comes from a distance, that means the assassin could be your friend or it's an enemy that knows your movements. Which
come
is
on,
why
man. Preach.
You never put yourself in a position, especially, this is not about necessarily about who's real and who's not, but this is a situation about who's smart and who's not. Because reality is, if you're, like you said, Jazz, if you're a real one, you know, King and myself, you know, we love what we do with this show. You know, King's, you know, King is the face of the brand, you know, and he has just unbelievably hilarious stuff he does on YouTube. For y'all that haven't seen his stuff, check it out. And myself, you know, I've been blessed to meet a lot of people along the way. You know, shout out Red Cafe, Jeezy, K-Slay, and so many others. But by the same token, I don't post up everywhere I'm at, because you never know who's watching and who might be, and, you know, what you have. You know, I don't, if I got the latest pair of Jordans, I don't put it out there. I don't put out, I don't put out how much money I have. I'm like, I'm okay being anonymous.
That
That's
ego, bro. That ego. You know, the minute those likes start jumping up, them niggas start seeing them hearts.
It's a drug.
They turn it up a little more.
Hey, you know what's sad too? You got artists out there, and you can tell them, look, man, this is what you need to do here to get this. You'll start getting your streaming money if you sit down and put your business in order right here. But you know what, man? What's sad, and I know people, my team, and they know we talk about this all the time. You got some of these artists that's so into impressing motherfuckers and want them to think that they got more than what they have, that they will go to the Hollywood Motion Picture Prop Store and spend $160 on $20,000 worth of fake money, then spend $35 of that money to make sure they copyright their catalog. And that's what blows my mind. And when I speak on it, oh, that's Jazzy. That's what's going on now, man. It's changed from when you was younger. What the fuck? You mean to tell me you'll take $150 and go to the Hollywood Motion Picture Prop Store and buy $10,000-$15,000 worth of fake money instead of taking $35 of that and take $100 of that and join a mechanical rights organization and join ASCAP BMI? Make sure but that's what it's come to. They're more into being famous and say, fuck, being successful. A guy told me within the last 6 months, they done made almost $2.3 million of selling fake money at them prop stores. I said, get out of here. He said, we don't just have one in Hollywood. He's talking about all the different prop stores, and they online. These guys are ordering fake money and would rather be impressing people on social media instead of getting the real money and getting their business together. So that's where it's different, man. Back in the day, hey, man, wasn't no social media. Now you got to impress people on social media. They buying likes. They buying followers. They buying you know, all kind of shit, instead of just being organic. Hey, man, take that money and put your team together and get all your business in order. You niggas will pay $150 to go get $10,000, $15,000 worth of fake money to get on social media and flop. Come on, man. Let's get our business together, man.
But that's crazy.
But that's
man.
Where the
they
divide comes. But see, that's the divide becomes, you know, because a lot of times the illusion is the impression that it's supposed to impress. But at the end, it just becomes a incident. Because when you really look at it, and shout out to Method Man, the OG, because Method Man, I think for a lot of our older generation, when he did an interview some years ago, and he was like asking, where are all these new rappers getting this money from? He's like, because I can account, because Method been in the game close to 30 years. So yeah. Method's like, I can account for all of my money. But he's like, how are these new niggas coming in getting all this money? And the thing is, we see these videos and all this money in it, you know, it's like, yeah, we just blew the bubble up. We just burst the bubble for a lot of y'all thinking that your favorite
hey,
rappers.
Hey,
it's WWE, my brother. It's WWE,
hey,
my
hey,
brother.
Hey,
niggas thinking Ted DiBiase
just,
really the $1 million man, son. They really think
man,
Ted DiBiase
just
really the $1 million man.
Hey, he just took, I was just finna say, you got the WWF of hip-hop and you got the MMF of hip-hop. And right now the WWF is dominating the
MMA
and MMA. There you go. So you know it's just it's so much fake shit. That's another reason why, because people be like, Jazzy, I didn't see you at this thing. I didn't see you that. I know I got to get out more, but I just can't. Even now, and I spoke on this and I deleted it off my live. You look back in the day when you go to a hip hop concert, and I don't care where I go. When I used to go to a hip-hop concert in the 80s and the 90s, you see LL Cool J, Curtis Blow, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, Ice-T, N.W.A. You couldn't get backstage because it'd be all women. Now, me, no disrespect to anybody, get down, what they like, what their preference is, their flavor. I'm going to just tell you this. Me, as a first-generation hip-hop head, I cannot stand going to the... Because, you know, my artist's been on pretty much all of the big shows. So when I go backstage, I remember back in the day when I was young, it would be women there to see their favorite MCs or their favorite female MCs. You know, I don't care where I go, man. I hate going backstage because people give me an all-access pass. I'll sit out in the audience and not want to go backstage because 90% of the people backstage, and I see known Crips, known Blood, you know, it's all niggas. And that blows my mind that the females have more balls than a lot of these niggas now because they like, you know, let the niggas get close to the celebrities. They drink and they drink and falling back. The females are even saying, I don't even like going backstage no more because of all the niggas. So that's showing you that this culture has changed. No disrespect to the male fans, but I feel sorry for the Ice Cubes, the Dub C's, the YG's, the Ty Dolla Signs. Backstage, man. When they go backstage, it's 90 niggas wanting to take pictures with them. They can't even take pictures with females no more. And that's why you don't see me at a lot of this stuff. No disrespect to the male groupies. But you niggas need to fall back and let the females go get close to their favorite male MCs and their female MCs. They want to take pictures too, niggas. Y'all niggas pushing, damn near stomping over the women to go put your arm around a nigga, man. And no disrespect. I know a lot of guys want to, they meet their MC for the first time or whatever. No disrespect to that. But I'm, everywhere I go, it's 90 niggas backstage. No women. The women fall back because they say, I can't even get close to LL. I can't even get close to the Dub C's. I can't get close because it's all niggas. Come on, y'all. And that's just my opinion. I don't go to a lot of events. And, hey, there's no women backstage no more to take pictures with their favorite celebrities because niggas, and that annoys me, you know. And
look,
the era of the cap.
And it's crazy.
The era of the captain, man.
Man. Let me stop, man.
This is killing
look,
me, man.
We take it back.
I see 90 dicks. 90 dicks, 95 dicks trying to take a picture of a nigga, man. You weirdos. Come on, man. 95 dicks to take a picture with another dude, man. Come on, let the girls, let the females take pictures, man. You look on all these social media pages, and it's niggas taking pictures with niggas. The girls can't even take pictures with their favorite MCs no more, and that bothers me, man. That bothers me.
Well, I mean, but one thing about it, look, when we can take it back to the good old days, I mean, shout out to, of course, the late, great Nate Dogg, Warren G, and Snoop Dogg on the 213 album, Groupie Love. I mean, we wanted the we wanted the cute, the female groupies. You know, we all in the house looking for the groupie love. And back in the day at those shows, that's what you were going
to
get. Look,
dude,
you were
trying
be,
to get, come on.
If you were part, man, look, if you were part of Entourage, if you were security, you know, if you just lucky enough to be back there, you know what I'm saying? They're looking at you like you somebody that you back there.
Come on, man.
Go ahead.
No. I was just saying, I got a flyer on my Instagram page right now from 1985, and I'm reminiscing. Lisa and Coat Jam, the Spin Master.
Ooh, you said Lisa.
Lisa and Coat Jam. And I remember
backstage.
I had a moment, y'all.
Backstage, man, you had women in lace, real beautiful women backstage. Just, you see a handful of dudes. That's letting me know that the culture has changed. And no disrespect, I don't want people to feel like, dang, he going hard on the male fans. No, it's just that male fans, take your picture. Ice Cube used to say, give me a handshake, a firm shake, you know, and then move. Like, you see your celebrity, shake his hand and keep it moving. You know, man, let the females enjoy. I mean, when you said earlier, it's changed, man, and that shit really bothers me, and it probably shouldn't bother me like it does, but I'm a first-generation hip-hop head here, man. The hatred, the groupieism, the male groupie thing is on another level here, man, and people wonder why, like, when my guys perform, I'm out. We out. I mean, I see a few people I shoot the breeze with, then I'm out, man. And people are like, Jazz, you got to rub shoulders more. I cannot fathom. I didn't never think it would be in the position that it is in now, man. You go backstage, you're going to see 90 niggas trying to take a picture with another dude. And, you know, it's sad because then you look around and you see the females, they not even trying to get by the male. Because they, see, I only go to these events because I'm making some bread. My artist performing. Or I don't really go if I'm invited and my people are not performing, and I hate to be like that, but I'm not comfortable with going backstage anymore. You can be with your woman, and your woman will tell you, look, I don't even want to go back there. And I'm like, damn, your woman telling you that, like, hey, let's go in the audience. This shit right here, I'm not cool with it. The women say that. Come on, man. And people get to talking down about the strippers. The strippers are the new pimps. And the rappers are the new hoes. These strippers got wing stops. Mm. They buying luxury cars. They buying their men fly suits, Mercedes Benz, and they making that off the rappers. The strippers are the new pimps, and the rappers are the new hoes. Them strippers, no disrespect to them. They buying, now they are dance at a strip club and then buy them one and say, forget dancing somewhere else. They going to own their own club. They buying luxury cars and renting it to the rappers. They done got so smart. They say, look, now all you see backstage is niggas that want to be famous. Let's rent them these cars. Let's let them do their videos in our strip club. There's strippers out there that own Wingstops, that own Chick-fil-A's, and they not doing it, but they not posting it on social media and all that because they going to the bank every month. They cashing checks. So the rappers are the new hoes and the strippers are the new pimps. And that's real talk. I sit and talk to a girl that said she got, her and her husband just bought a Chick-fil-A, and she was stripping. She got six of those girls that were stripping in that club with her, and they stripped and did whatever they did and made their bread, and now they own a fucking Chick-fil-A. You got some that own Wingstops. But these rappers, no disrespect to them because there's some, shout out to the ones that got their own clothing stores, 211.
Shout out to Rick Ross, especially Rico, with his Wingstops.
Yeah, everybody that, and I'm saying that, the ones that's doing their thing, the ones that's out there, rest in peace, Nip, the ones that seem, okay, I'm going to use my rap career to become an entrepreneur. Shouts out to those. But, you know, these strippers, people talk down on them, but they buying shit. They entrepreneurs. They getting involved in franchises from stripping, you know. The strippers are the new pimps, and the rappers are the new hoes.
And these rappers are straight goofy, man. They over there empowering the women.
And it's wild because one thing about it, Jazzy and King, you know, one thing, and we're all, you know, from this, you know, we're all first generation from this. So one thing about it, but in terms of the panoramic view of the entertainment industry, it's all about the what's called the second act, which what you said, Jazzy, has to do with in terms of what comes after your rap career. Nipsey Hussle, God rest his soul, we are so sad we did not get a chance to get him on the show because we were working on it. With Nipsey in terms of his, because he's, of course, not the first in terms of his entrepreneurial excellence, but Nip was somebody who took it to the next level in terms of his music, in terms of what he was trying to do. Tell us about when you, because you knew Nip personally, tell us about from, you know, younger Myers growing up in the 60s to becoming Nipsey in terms of the mixtapes, of course, with Blue Laces, Bullets Ain't Got No Names, Mailbox Money, Crenshaw, and then ultimately, you know, opening up the Marathon store and everything. What was it like to watch his growth in terms of his business and just what he was doing from his deal with Sony that fell through to when he went independent and just did what he did?
Well, I'm going to speak from just me conversing with him, and you know, I every now and then I would go up to the shop on Crenshaw and Slauson and buy a few things and chop it up with him. But I had a chance to really talk to Nip before he blew up, before he got, you know, the name that he got. I met Nipsey through Kev Mac. He does the Kev Mac interview.
Shout out Big Kev.
Kev Mac introduced me to Nipsey when he was a youngster, man. And Kev Mac gave me a mixtape. I listened to the mixtape, real aggressive mixtape, you know, speaking his culture, his hood, you know. But I seen something in him young, but I was doing other things. But I had the opportunity to speak to him before he really prospered. And when he started kind of, you know, because I know Jay Stone, Infant, I know all of them, man, because everybody know me as trying to, I talk education, hey, copyright this, learn this, join this organization. So that's what they know me. I don't talk to them on no Crip and Blood stuff. But I say that to say, Nipsey, I went up on Crenshaw when he was kind of getting his buzz, because me and Glasses was doing business together, because I know who Glasses' brother.
Shout out G Malone, man, and Watts.
Yeah,
man.
So, Nipsey was kind of getting his buzz, and every now and then Glasses would have him in certain places, and he heard me talking one day, and he heard me talking about ownership and all that, because some people say, man, you're not upset, Nipsey? Nah, man, you know, Big U did what he did to get Nipsey certain places, and then Steve LaBelle, and, you know, I respect everybody's participation in helping him. But the conversation I had with him, I was talking to him about ownership. And, you know, everybody used to get on my head because I never was with mixtapes. So me and Nipsey, he was saying, you don't think when you throw a mixtape out there for free and get your name out there? Everybody debated me on that because I would say, yeah, you know, but why is hip-hop the only genre of music that do the mixtape when I was young? And he said, yeah, but it ain't what it was when you was younger, which is true. But when we did mixtapes coming up, a mixtape was a rapper rapping over previously released instrumentals. I was against a rapper like the youngsters doing raps over original music and going and getting a feature, and they'll pay for a feature and they call it a mixtape. That's like buying a Mercedes and popping all the Mercedes-Benz emblems off of it and putting Honda Accord on it, to me back then. But I had a conversation with Nip, and you can go on YouTube right now. I'm not doing this. Rest in peace, Nip. Love you for life. I had conversations with him outside of music, and we talked about, you know, outside of the glamour shit, and we talked business. And if you go on YouTube right now, I'm not saying this to get no points or nothing like that. It's still on YouTube. It's 12 years old. Jazzy's, J-A-Z-Z-Y-S, Get Some Game. And I bumped into him. He came to a little thing that we got the name of, and he said, man, I seen your YouTube where you said, for, you know, basically campaign your mixtape. And the rest is history. I'm not saying he did what he did because of me, but I did, and this is a true story. I had a conversation with him, and that information is still on YouTube. I'm not doing this for no clout chasing or none of that, you know. Cause, and after that, Nip hit us up, and he said, man, he gave the Eastsiders some love. He flipped, him and Mustard flipped they G'd up song, and he said, you know what, I want to bring y'all out. And that's when he brought us out on the beat, the summer, you know, the beat thing, whatever. And he brought the Eastsiders out, you know. So I had so much respect for that dude, because he definitely wanted to change, you know, the inner city. He had a whole lot, you know. I don't know him as well as Jay Stone and his team, Cobby and all of them, but man, he left a strong legacy, man. And shout out, and I've never met G Perico, you know. I see what
Shout out Broadway, Broadway, man.
Yeah, man.
Shout
all
out G Perico,
the young
way
cats.
Out. Yes.
Yeah, man. They I love to see the youngsters doing their thing, man. 2-11, G Perico. If I'm leaving anybody out, the ones that's showing these youngsters, you do not have to be a victim of your environment. You can grow up in a certain area and be your own boss. You don't always have to hit somebody else's clock. And I love to see them do so. I'm not just coming down on. I see the ones that's using their, you know, artistry and becoming entrepreneurs. I take my hat off to them, man, because we need more individuals like that, because now these kids are not wanting to be police officers. They're not wanting to be firemen. They're not wanting to be pilots. They want to be rappers. So let's educate them and show them the 211s, the G Pericos, the cats that's out there being entrepreneurs, and I won't say following in Nipsey's footsteps, but that's showing, okay, I can be an artist and I can parlay that into being a successful entrepreneur. So, you know, I take my hat off to those guys, man. And I've never met Perico, but his movement, I see what he's doing.
And for those that don't know, because he, you know, because Jazzy mentioned 211, 211 has his own clothing and sneaker store and doing well with it, man. Shout out, man. And of course, G Perico with his Stowaway Out clothing. I've been a fan of G for years, man. I mean, he is like really doing it in terms of his, you know, just his own movement and how he has really, really, really blown it up for himself, man. Shout out Broadway Gangsta, man. I mean, he's really doing it, man.
You know, I see a lot of little cats, man. Lil Bam, he got his clothing thing going. You know, we have the whole Supreme Circle thing. You know, we just want to change the. It ain't just being successful in music; it's being successful entrepreneurs and showing, hey, let's parlay this into being successful entrepreneurs. So, shout out to everybody that's trying to, you know, show that we don't need that middleman when it comes to us being successful. There you go.
Yeah, man.
And that's what I like about it. That's what I like to see too. I like also, just like I talked about the other day, I like seeing Snoop Dogg taking that executive role of Def Jam. Like, that's a start of bringing people that we are accustomed to in terms of knowing who's in tune with the culture back into a power position. Because if you looked at that Def Jam boardroom at that time, it was no black and brown faces up there. So Snoop going in there changing the guard is a start.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I just love to see people seeing that it's not just music, it's the music business. And that's always been my purpose, man. Whenever I come around to get the youngsters, man, people have long conversations with Bad Luck. Shouts out to Melee, Young Melee. Certain people, man, that'll call me, hey, Jazz, what you doing? I'm not doing nothing. And they pick my brain, but also will call me and just check up on me. Like, man, they'll tell me, I don't think you understand how much you mean to the culture. And that should make me feel good, man, because for some reason, man, a lot of these managers and there's some little punk ass artists out there that I've embraced and showed love for that did some old weird shit. But overall, man, I get a lot of respect from the ones that'll call me. Jazzy, shouts out to Snoopy Blue, man. It's times I was just talking crazy, man, and he's younger than me, man. He'll reach out to me and have a real, you'll think he's 20 years older than me, man. And we ain't talking about no street stuff. He just talked some sense into me, you know. And I'm not ashamed to put that out there, you know. I've had long conversations and deep conversations with Lil Bam. I've had deep conversations with cats out there that understand, man. I'm my position here, I want to see people win. How is it people out there that speak down on a person that wants you to understand the business side of the game so you'll benefit off your hard work today when you retire from this shit? Because right now, if a lot of these artists was to retire, they would not have no source of income because they didn't do the proper things to keep that revenue coming. And you got to look, 85% of rappers, and I'm not going to put R&B, 85% of rappers, and a large amount of them are here on the West Coast, do not even own their stage name. And they're doing shows. They're putting out music on digital platforms. Some of them are even getting placements in movies and all that. And they don't even own their stage name. And they have the audacity to have managers.
Yeah. That was something we wanted to touch on earlier too, Jazzy. We were running in so many different directions. But yeah, but a copyright also has to do with your stage name. You know, everything
Come on,
it
man.
Has to do with your
That's
business.
Right. That's right.
It is your intellectual property. From your publishing
Preach.
Of your music and your lyrics to even, yes, for those, I will reiterate again, your stage name, because that is what you perform under. And this was a situation, of course, with two artists, legends in the game. Rest in peace to the late, great Biggie, because Biggie Smalls was actually copyrighted by another group, and that's when he changed it to Notorious B.I.G. For those who don't know, that's why he had to change his name. We still call him Biggie. Because obviously that was in, you know, in the colloquial terms of how we recognize, you know, Chris Wallace, and also with Common Sense. He had to change it to Common because another band had trademarked the name Common Sense. So Common had to change his name to just Common. You know, there are a lot of nuances people have to understand in terms of how language works. And for those who don't understand, yes, words matter in how they are utilized.
My only question would be, how did the Firm get away with using the Firm? Because there was a rock band called the Firm.
Yeah, I remember that. That's a good question.
It depends.
The rock band didn't apply pressure.
I know I'm gonna get some calls,
but I fight for the underdog. I want to see the rappers win, even though they talk shit and say what they want. It's a crew of people that's out there that's waiting for them little youngsters to get a certain amount of followers, and I'm talking about authentic, generic, I'm talking about real authentic followers and real likes. I'm talking about real fans. They waiting for them to get their buzz up to a certain level, and they're going to be getting a cease and desist to their email, to whoever calling themselves managing them, and they're going to say, hey, I own that name. And here it is. I've been saying this for a long time. Now I'm only going to say it on interviews and to the people I know that want to be successful. But half these cats that don't own their name have managers. But you got a crew of people. You don't have to believe me. You know, some of them are going to probably be, Jazzy, oh, man, why would you do that? Because I fight for the underdog. I'm telling y'all. Once you get a certain amount of numbers out there and your buzz go to a certain level, you're going to get a cease and desist on your name, the name that you've been pushing. You've been putting out content, building that name, putting in a lot of work, and they're going to tell you, hey, we want $20,000 or you're going to stop using that name. In reality, they only want 5 or 10. You're going to, hey, if you want that name and you done push that name and built that name up, you're going to give them what they're going to give you a high price to really get what they want. So I'm giving y'all some game. 85% of you rappers and singers out there do not even own your stage name. And I can go on Spotify and I can go on iTunes and see 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 albums that y'all put out there, and you don't even own your name. Come on, guys.
I mean, this is what Prince was fighting for all those years with Warner Brothers, because they owned his name. You know what I'm saying? I think this was the issue in NFL. I believe when it used to come on ESPN Outside the Lines, they did a story about it in terms of the NFL players with their names on a jersey. Then in terms
exactly.
of the merchandising, they didn't even own that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
they signed off on that when they signed their deals with them. You know, with the NBA
team.
And the NFL. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's considered a corporation. So the thing is, you work for that corporation. So
man,
they have
these labels,
exclusive rights.
They're going to want that piece.
And here it is. I'm just giving, from a business side, how can anybody have something negative to say? I ain't never did. I just want to, and it's a shame, man, because I sit up sometimes and I'm like, who would have some? Who, I ain't never took no money from nobody. I want to see everybody win, and I only preach this. Hey, copyright, do this and that, and people have something to say, and then 90% of those guys, when you see them at events, what's up, Jazzy? They shaking your hand. They know I don't drink. Hey, man, you want a Pepsi? You want this and that? And my solid cats that I grew up with tell me, man, I was just in the studio with that weirdo, and he was saying this. I'm not, hey, man, anybody know I'm not the biggest dude on earth. I don't roll with a crew, you know, proud Cuban and black brother that stand tall. But all I want to see is people win. I genuinely want to see people win. I want to see you buy that house you promised your mother. I want to see you not argue with your girl because you on your phone and you sacrificing going into the studio and going and doing shows and you not bringing a whole lot of money home. Here it is, you got a big bro that want to see you put your pieces together where you start getting a check, where you not arguing with your girl, you not taking more money out the bank and leaving and coming home with nothing. I want to see y'all win, but you got these sucker niggas out there that see you as competition and see you as a threat because you educated, well-groomed, know how to talk, and you'll bust one of them in their mouth. And I'm not trying to turn it into nothing violent, but we got a syndrome here where they don't embrace knowledge. They embrace that fugazi, funny, fake, stupid shit. Oh, yeah, and fake Hollywood prop money.
Well, one thing about it, Jazzy, is you always stand firm. And, you know, us at Off the Cuff, we don't endorse violence, but we will put a foot up a nigga ass if necessary.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, but the thing is, too, but it's always like this. And I learned this a long time ago. If respect isn't given, it has to be taught.
Come on, man.
You know? And one thing about it, man, is for you to really be so distinguished, so learned, so experienced, and so generous to, you know, give us these gems for everyone listening out there. I mean, this is something that is rarefied air of academics. Your prestige is platinum, and it speaks volumes about the voice of your character and how loud it resonates. We're closing. We're about to close in on the end of it,
yeah.
Jazzy. We knew this was going to be a great show. This was a ginormous.
Because of the school, man.
Yes, man.
Yeah.
I mean, look, this is an advanced academia of everything. Damn, we didn't even get to talk about you doing the like when you, all the class like the like USC and USCLA when you taught class over there. Damn, we missed
that.
Yeah. We got to get you on part two for that.
Oh yeah, man. Man. I spoke at USC, UCLA, a lot of youth centers, man. And like I said, if I wasn't a true soldier, a frontline soldier for the culture, man, a lot of these places I spoke in Arizona, I mean, I can go on and on at the platforms I've spoke on, man. You know, shouts out to Mr. Fab, man. We converse
the
all the time, man. That's another person that I got a lot of respect for that's doing this entrepreneur thing, traveling and making moves and giving good information every day, man. I love that dude to death, man. That's my little bro, man. So, you know, I've taught and I continue teaching. I'm on a lot of Zoom calls. I'm a frontline soldier for us fighting for this streaming shit that they robbing us on. I mean, hey, I'm a frontline soldier for the culture, man. And, shouts out to everybody that's out there, you know, that's learning and understanding the true meaning of ownership.
Yeah, man, and one thing about it, it's about, like you said, creating a legacy. You know, one thing about it, Jazzy, this has been, you know, this has been tremendous, man. You know, you're welcome back anytime. Thank you for the gems, for those treasures of thought that we keep close to our chest. Is there any shout-outs you want to give going out before we close shop for the night?
Man, I've sent a shout-out. You know what, it's tough for me to say shout-outs because there's so many people I love out there. And got respect for my team. You know, we got the Supreme Circle Proven Grounds. We going to be really making a change in the game. Shouts out, like I said, to the entrepreneurs. I said their names, but that's pushing and doing their thing. Everybody that feel that really know me, that embrace me, that ain't talked behind my back, I love y'all. I even love the people that talk behind my back. And my son, Cut the Check, my son, Devon Rosa, and his little, they doing their thing. I want to start helping them do their thing and get their buzz up. Just everybody out there that's true to the culture and embrace knowledge. I love y'all because I know I got so many people that I can name. You know, shout out to Glasses, Dub C, rest in peace, Toons, Evil Ian, Hen, G, Ice-T. And I got to give a shout out, and I'm going to stop here. And to the ones I didn't say, I apologize. But I got to give a shout out to Tony Gonzalez. The one for Tony Gonzalez, I wouldn't have never really been on wax. He took me and really learned the game. Tony Gonzalez, the original mix master. Tony Gonzalez, man. You know I got to shout out to motherfucking Mighty Eastsiders for embracing me when Trady came home and making me a part of the team. Yak, Trady, Goldie. Hey, man, let's make history, y'all.
We're here for all of it. And look, you know, Jazz, you know we're Off the Cuff Radio. We are here for anything you know y'all need from us. And look, we already in the process, you know, plugging you in with some people we know to help every, you know, help y'all moving along, man. So we're just gonna keep doing it. You know, we're gonna keep, you know, pushing and persevering and ultimately succeeding. You know, expressing, excelling. And on that note, y'all, God bless to the universe.
And let me say what's up. I got to say.
Yes, please.
Steiny,
go ahead.
Probably not my other partner, man, that he takes a big load off my back, man. Steiny, man. Artie Shield, my probably not partner, man. Love that dude to death, man. What's up, man? I had to shout him out, man.
Definitely.
Most definitely,
good, man.
We definitely going to keep building that bridge.
Definitely, man. Love y'all for having me, man. We got to do a part two, man.
We will. Love you so much, man.
Thank you
for everything. You know, like I said, have all your people hit us on our individual IG and on our off-the-cuff page, man. So we all, like, connected with it.
Most definitely, man.
All right.
Mike Stroh, I got to send him my guy Mike Stroh. Love that dude to death, man. He going to be a superstar before he retire.
Definitely. And on that note, y'all.
Yeah, man, on that note, we up out of here.
All right, y'all.
All right. Peace. One.